Hello and welcome to UK Carcast, the podcast by non-sport trading car collectors for non-sport trading car collectors. I'm your host Paul Bynes and this is episode 24, The Opposite of Blow. Hello everybody and welcome to a brand new episode of the UK Carcast podcast. Break time is over. Thank you very much to everybody who sent me messages of support via Twitter, Facebook, LSU, Scoundrel and of course email. All of them were gratefully received and I'm touched that anybody wanted me to continue doing the podcast as much as they did. I have a few things planned for this year, but I'm not going to go into details on those yet. What I'm going to go into details though is what's happening in this episode. It's a Harris free episode, I'm afraid, so if you're a fan of Harris then you'll have to wait for the next one. Don't worry, Harris will be back in probably episode 25, and I'm hoping to get Chris Kersey, our regular sketch card correspondent, on that episode as well. Now, this one is devoted almost entirely to an interview I conducted with the Suck Lord and Tom Lichtman of Sidekick Media. They produced a brand new set based on the world of the Suck Lord called Suckadelic Series 1. Towards the end of last year, this was. Well, they very generously sent me a box to review. I've reviewed that and you'll find the review on the Carcast website. If you go to carcast.co.uk and click on the new reviews section, you'll find a illustrated review of the set with car breakdowns and all that sort of stuff. The interview follows shortly. Before I get onto that though, we have had a break and there has been some news in the few months since I've been away, so I'm going to do a quick rundown now. Firstly, some sad news. Andrew Koenig, the son of well-known actor from series such as Star Trek and Babylon 5, Walter Koenig, passed away in the last week. He had been missing in Vancouver for about a week or so, and unfortunately his body was discovered in a park in Vancouver. Our deepest sympathies go out to Mr. Koenig and to his family, and indeed to anybody that knew Andrew in any way, shape or form. Moving on to brighter news, Tappy Jack Collectibles do a range of exclusive promos, usually limited to about 500 and usually only available with purchases made from their eBay store. Well, they have a new promo out. It features Bela Lugosi as Dracula and is drawn by Robert Aragon. The cards have been printed on special foil stock and really do look fantastic. If I get a chance, I'll put a scan up on the Carcast website. Ordinarily, as I mentioned, these things are only available by purchasing something from Happy Jack on their eBay store. However, they have very generously sent me a couple of the cards to give away on this podcast. So, if you'd like one, I only have two to go to listeners of the podcast, so it's literally the first two emails I receive will get these cards. Send an email to the UK Carcast address, that's ukcarcast@googlemail.com. ukcarcast@googlemail.com. You should find email address lurking somewhere on the Carcast website as well. Make the subject Bela Lugosi promo. Put in the main body of your email your postal address with your name. I will send promos out to the first two emails I receive that have been correctly set up. So as long as they have Bela Lugosi promo in the subject field and they have your name and address in the main body of the text, if you're one of the first to arrive, you'll get a promo. I won't be entering into correspondence with anybody that doesn't win one, so if you haven't had a card in the post within the next month or so, then I'm afraid you didn't win one. But if you still would like a card, then have a look at the Happy Jack store on eBay. Do a search for Happy Jack Collectibles on eBay, and if you make a purchase, I'm sure if they have some in stock, they'll let you have one. Collectors of Star Wars trading cards will be well aware of the StarWarsCards.net website. Indeed, I've mentioned them in the past, and they've been kind enough to mention UK Carcast as well. Well, Kathy Kendrick, who set up the site some years ago, recently set up a donate appeal so that the StarWarsCards.net domain name could be renewed. She has in fact already raised enough funds to cover the cost of renewing the domain name. However, the appeal is, as far as I'm aware, ongoing as I speak. So, if you'd like to support StarWarsCards.net, I think some other options being considered for any funds raised in addition to those already used for renewing a domain name are paying for web hosting charges, that sort of thing. Pop along to StarWarsCards.net StarWarsCards.net and make a donation. There has been some controversy in the UK Carcast break time concerning Upper Deck and Strictly Inc. Upper Deck was involved in a lawsuit which has subsequently been settled concerning UGO cards, and Ray Harryhausen has issued a press release on his website concerning the validity of certain sketch cards that were released by Strictly Inc. in their year boxes. I'm not going to go into the details, but if you would like more information on both, then you might want to pop along to cultstuff.com, where the stories broke more or less and have been investigated ever since. You'll find Cult Stuff at cult-stuff.com. Bragent Marketing have announced that they are looking for sketch artists to contribute to a number of upcoming sets. It is highly likely that the slots have already been filled by the time you get to hear this. However, if you are interested in more information, you might want to get in touch with Bragent. At the time of recording, Bragent was still looking for artists to contribute towards their Woodstock and Golden Age of Comics sets. If you're an artist, you might want to get in touch with them. Drop Tom at Bragent an email. You'll find his email address is tom@bragent.com. That's Tom, T-O-M, at Bragent, B-R-E-Y-G-E-N-T.com. One little snippet that isn't directly related to trading cards, though you never know, it may appear on a trading card one day. I can highly recommend, just because it is fun, it's simply fun, a website called axcop.com. It's difficult to describe, I'll have a go. Basically, it's a comic strip written by a 5-year-old and is drawn by his 29-year-old brother. Really, you need to go to the axcop.com website to check out what I'm talking about here. It really is fun. It's inventive, imaginative, and has a sort of storytelling that really could only come out of the mind of an imaginative 5-year-old. Have a look. It is incredibly silly. There is a store, and for a limited time only, or in other words, while they've got stocks available, you can get hand-drawn versions of some of the characters from the Axcop series. Take a look, see what you think. That's all the news for now. There's a couple of little things I want to say about the upcoming interview. First one is, unfortunately, something went wrong to my end of the call part of the way through the recording session. My computer crashed. Before that, my half of the recording sounded fine. Well, as fine as it can sound, given it's my voice. After I rebooted, for some reason, my part of the conversation was buzzy. There was a loud buzzy noise. Now, I've re-recorded a couple of the really badly buzzed bits using exactly the same wording, but most of my side of the interview I've left because it wasn't as bad as I at first thought. However, there is a noticeable buzz to my voice, so please be aware of that. The other thing is that in the course of the conversation, one or two of the more common Anglo-Saxon swear words can be heard. Now, I've blanked out a couple of the stronger ones, but because I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the conversation, so to speak, I have left some of the milder swear words in. Obviously, I realise that some listeners may very well be offended by the use of such words. If you are likely to be offended by the use of some of the milder swear words, then please be aware this interview contains them. Towards the end of last year, a new set came out called Psychedelic, produced by a company called Sidekick Labs. Now, this set has been amazingly popular, and there are fans, hardcore fans, on all around the world, as far as I understand it. I'm very pleased to be able to welcome Tom Lichtman from Sidekick Labs, and the man responsible for the Suck Lord range and Psychedelic, the Suck Lord himself. Guys, welcome to UK Carcast.
Thank you, from New York City.
Thank you very much indeed for coming on.
And thank you.
Well, I have to say, we have had some conversations before recording, and I have been raving over this set. There is a review on the Carcast website. I was absolutely raving over this thing because it's such a wonderful idea. It's a trading card set, but it's also a piece of art in its own right. How did this come about? How did the two of you guys get together to come up with this set?
Well, Tom used to be a customer of mine. He used to collect my bootleg action figures, and you know, we got acquainted that way. And then last year, I was recruited by Topps to curate their die-cut sketch card artists. It was my job to go out and find, quote-unquote, underground artists to contribute to that set. And that went reasonably well and was considered to be somewhat of an innovation in trading cards, you know, the shapes themselves and the sort of left turn that the content took. And Tom over here got the idea in his head, it's like, you should do a set of trading cards as well. And I had thought about that a long time ago, and I insisted, given my age, that they had to be vintage-style wax cards, et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't know how to do that, so I put it on the shelf for a couple of years. And then when he came to me and said, well, I'm a pretty inventive type of guy, and I can figure out how to make it that way, I was like, all right, it's on, let's do it. And he started doing the R&D for the production.
And Tom, you've done an amazing job, not replicating, bringing back to life that old style of vintage card. I mean, these are, just in case any listeners haven't seen these cards, these are the real old-fashioned trading cards you used to get in Tops and ABC and all sorts of other sets with the gum, and they're in proper wax packets. But that must have been a real work to get those things together and to bring back some of those skills.
Yeah, it actually... When the Sucklord and I started talking about this, and he said, it's gotta be vintage, you know? And I said, well, okay, and let me see what I can do. And I began to research it, and I still had my card collection from when I was a kid. Mm. I was one of those few people whose mother did not throw away their trading cards. So I started pouring through those, and I started looking at them, and I realized that it was a whole different world of physical cards back then. Mm-hmm. In fact, they went through several eras. There's the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Each has its distinctive. So we started studying those and seeing how, and I liked what you said about bringing it back to life, not just reproducing, but actually making them with the same or as close as possible materials as back then, the printing methods. In fact, what I did was when it came time to actually print the cards, there's many elements to make them give that vintage, true look, feel, and to be identical to the old vintage cards. Mm-hmm. And one of them was to find an old printer. So I found a company that had a 70s era printer and was willing to take on this unusual stock. I had to track that down, which is not typical printing stock. And so it turned out just wonderful to be able to use an old machine. We've got some video footage of it that the Sucklord put up on his site.
Yeah, Tops have had a go at doing these things. They've done a couple of heritage style sets where they've attempted to replicate the look of those vintage cards. They've been in a wax style pack. It's just waxed paper that has been crimped at each end rather than properly wax. But the difference between them and yours is that you've actually gone for proper wax packs. They've been hand guillotined, and you've made special efforts to source the card itself, the proper vintage style card.
Once the cards were printed, the modern way of actually doing these would be to put them into a computerized cutter that would do this amazingly precise cutting. But when we studied the old cards, they were all over the place in terms of registration. Some were cut close to one edge, close to another edge. And when you look at the old cards and look at a lot of the old cards, they were mass-produced and in large quantities and very sloppy. So I actually insisted that the printing company hand-cut the cards with a guillotine cutter that was, again, a period cutter. And they were trying very hard, but they couldn't get quite all the alignments perfect. And I kept saying to them, no, that's what we want. If we want the misregistration.
It's a natural resistance in a company that's used to delivering a professional, slick product to be told, no, we actually want those imperfections. We want it that rough.
Right.
Well, it's weird to like go out of your way to make things suck a little bit more than they have to.
Exactly. And Sucklord, you were having input on this process the whole way through.
Well, I mean, I was happy to have somebody else that was doing all this legwork, especially doing sort of technical things that I didn't understand. He'd already bought into the whole Suckadelic concept, so I trusted he understood what my sort of aesthetic parameters were, and it's like it worked for me because everything I do is a little off or a little sloppy just because I like to get things done fast and quick, and I'm not really a perfectionist in that regard. And so it's just funny, though, that it's like a lot of my shit sucks just because that's the natural order of things. And he had to sort of inject the suckiness into this project a little bit. An interesting process just trying to figure out, like, where do you draw that line? You know, when does it suck just enough, and when is it too sucky, and when is it not sucky enough? But he nailed it.
He certainly did. The set concentrates on the Sucklord and your world, and the individual cards in the base set feature various aspects of your work in the underground art scene, in particular some of your action figures. How long have you been involved in that whole area of art and creativity?
One answer is my whole life. You know, it's like I've been buying Star Wars toys since 78 when they first came out. And ever since then, I knew that's what I wanted to do, and I was doing my own sort of childlike attempts at creating toys. I was trying to make molds using bars of soap and melting crayons into the bar to make casts of my Greedo figures, and doing things with clay and all, you know, so I've always been interested in that. Professionally, I've been doing it since about 2004, 2005, when I actually set up shop and started actually hand producing these figures. I actually create the molds myself and pour all the castings and do all the finishing and the painting and the packaging all here in my studio in Chinatown. Some people do it, but a lot of people in the so-called designer toy world have their toys manufactured in China, with exceptions. But as far as I know, I was one of the first people in that world to actually take the production on myself. To make them.
Which is what attracted me to start collecting you in the first place, was the fact that you were simulating highly automated factory production, yet doing it all by hand.
That was the idea. I couldn't get that China deal, so I wanted to make a Star Wars figure, and I wanted to make it look as close as I could. You know, and that's how it came about. It is a sort of, it's not exactly a Star Wars figure. It's sort of like an attempt to make a Star Wars figure.
Yes.
And that's why I called them bootlegs, you know, and called the company Suckadella, because I knew they, just given the process, that they weren't really going to come out perfect looking. So rather than try to hide that or minimize that, I sort of elevated that to a feature, you know, where it's like these things are a little crappier and there's an illicitness to them and there's something even vaguely illegal about them. The bad quality is sort of part of the appeal. And that's sort of that's the same sort of aesthetic that I think carried over into the cards as well.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly has carried over to the cards to the extent that you've done some personal customization of a number of the cards, including paint spatter, the graffiti has been added to them, some of them have been shot, some of them have been burned. I mean, it was just fantastic to see that sort of stuff happening to a set of cards. Normally when you open a pack of cards, you expect to get a pristine set of a bundle of five or six cards, and if you're lucky, you might get a piece of sketch art or a costume card or an autograph. You don't ordinarily expect to get an Amtrak ticket or a card that's been practically burnt in half or even shot. How did you come up with doing those sorts of things? In its own way, it's subversive as far as trading cards are concerned, but it's a valid piece of art in its own right.
Well, I think part of it was just we were just having fun with it. I mean, Tom came up with a shooting idea. I think it really came out of the fact is that this was a handmade series. This wasn't being produced in some remote place. Just Tom did the printing and the cutting and a lot of the pack, the wrapping, and then, you know, we contributed to the folding. You figured, well, if we're both sitting here with our girlfriend putting these things together, and there's only 100 boxes, so it's like we have a lot more freedom to, like, screw around. You know, I think we're both sort of natural mischief makers in general, and it's like we like to push people's buttons, especially, you know, trying to be some kind of artist. You want to go around and play games with people and mess with people's expectations, and given how small the actual industry of this was, it gave us a lot of freedom to just make things up on the fly. It was like on, like, the last day before I left, the first folding session, I was like, you know what, why don't I splash paint on some of these leftover cards? It's a total afterthought, you know, and it was just like, we had the freedom to do it, and we wanted to, so we did. We figured that's also the thing that would keep people opening packages if they didn't know what to expect. It was going to be something wacky in there that wasn't advertised, keeps people interested.
Plus, it enhanced the fact that they were handmade, and this wasn't, and I'm sure I hope you'll excuse me, this wasn't a slick professional operation. If one of the major companies had come up with the idea of splashing paint on some of their cards to make them a little more rad, my use of lingo, they would have waited and let the paint dry. One of the packs I opened, it had two or three cards stuck together because the paint had literally not quite been dry and they stuck together. But that meant that instead of having one card with perfectly dried paint on it, I had two or three cards that had paint on the back, paint on the front, and it just added to the neatness of the whole thing. I thought, yeah, I love this. It's just a brilliant idea.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's what's interesting about doing something like that is like a personal connection. It's like the guy that made the card can, you know, get the report from the guy that opened the card about what he experienced on the other end. And it's like, I remember putting that in that pack, and it's weird that it's just interesting that, you know, the community is small enough that you can actually get that type of back and forth.
Yeah, if you don't stop me, I will rave about this set forever and a day.
Go ahead.
Another aspect about this, which some might consider retro, but I personally think is a great way of encouraging going back to what trading cards is all about, which is trading. I know this has been discussed on a number of the various online forums as well. You can't get a full set of the base cards from one box. You have to either trade cards with other people or try and track down the odd cards that you're missing.
Or you could just buy another box.
Or buy another box. Yeah, I was working on that. That was a deliberate policy, was it? To try and encourage the trading aspect or trying to make sure that the collector didn't have an easy job in building up their set.
Absolutely. When we were planning the set, we talked about what would be chase cards or what would be base set and what would constitute those. And in that discussion, we realized that the thrill was the chase for all cards, meaning that if every box had a full base set, then that becomes tripe. Mm-hmm. So we deliberately shorted cards in the base set. So there's very few boxes that have an entire base set. I think one or two snuck through that have a full base set, but almost all of them are missing at least one card, and yet you might have some extras of another scarce base set card. We wanted to remind people of what was fun about these cards and the fact that you didn't instantly get everything in one box and then 5 minutes later forget about it because it's all done already.
Yeah.
That you actually had to go and find somebody else who also had these cards and swap with them to get the ones you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, in that respect, it is definitely playing with the format, because I think collectors of late have had it relatively easy. I know on other sets from some of the more commercial manufacturers, people complain when they don't get one base set, or they complain that they only got one base set from a box of 36 packs, and they complain when they only get one autograph, or they complain when they only get one sketch. And obviously the Psychedelic set played with that because it had an autograph, it had a checklist, it had sketch cards, and I'm going to come on to the sketch cards in a moment. But you couldn't necessarily guarantee getting a full base set of cards. There were unnumbered cards that didn't necessarily appear on the checklist that you didn't know that you didn't have them until you checked with somebody else and found out that you didn't have them.
I mean, we just wanted to fool people. I mean, that's the one short answer. It's
yeah.
Like, you know, it's like things got too easy and it was too nice. If you could just go and, with a single purchase, just buy the complete set, you may as well just make the content into a book.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact of the card, that they're cards, is like, it's all these things you have to gather together, and it's like, it's the thrill of the chase, and it's making people work, and it's also encouraging people to buy more boxes.
Yeah.
It's like, everything I have to offer is contained in a single purchase. You don't get any repeat customers. We got guys buying like 5, 6, 7 boxes, still not satisfied, so obviously from a business point of view, that was a good idea.
That works, yeah. You have got a hardcore following for this set. I mean, there are people that are posting online and saying they are actively buying boxes and boxes and boxes and packs and packs and packs of these things.
Well, also, it may be short a few of the base cards, but we have 6, 7, 8 specialty cards in every box,
mm-hmm.
Between a sketch card, signature card, cards with bullet holes in them, burnt cards, ladder cards. There's quite an array.
Golden ticket, don't forget that.
The golden ticket, yes, of course. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Which hasn't been redeemed yet. We haven't heard from anyone yet, so I'm assuming it's still in one of the boxes that have yet to been opened.
So rush out and buy those boxes now if you want to get that golden ticket, because that's offering a very special prize, isn't it?
Yes, you win a very unique Psychedelic action figure if you get that.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to debase yourself. The instructions of how to properly approach the Suck Lord when you find the ticket are written on the back.
Right.
You have to assume a certain position in order to redeem your prize.
I look forward to hearing if anybody actually goes that far and claims it. That'll be fantastic. But again, it enhances the fact that this isn't just a trading card set. It's a piece of conceptual art. You were saying yourself earlier, the Psych Lord, it's about the personal connection between yourself as the artist, hand-collating these cards, hand-altering these cards, in some cases hand-making these cards, and the collector who's establishing that connection. I know a few people have reacted badly in some respects to the price of the box and the price of the packs. I mean, the box price is $175, and I know you're selling on the website packs of 5 packs for $25. Now, that is high in comparison to a regular trading card box, where you might pick those up for anywhere between $40 and $60. But people, if they're looking at that and saying that's too expensive, they're looking at it in the wrong way, aren't they?
Well, yeah, it's not a mass-produced thing. This is a handmade thing, and you have to also take into consideration the sort of technology that had to be sort of revived and created for this. I mean, it's like, it's a whole different scale. It's not like Topps churning out hundreds of thousands of boxes of something using the same paper and the same equipment and the sort of same methods that they've used time and time again. I mean, this all had to be created from nothing. And, you know, we just did a simple economic formula and determined that that was what the price was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I say, I mean, I got that the minute I opened it up and looked at it. But I know there are people. Again, I think it's the perception amongst perhaps the newer wave of collectors. They expect to get a minimum amount for a minimum cost. And when they see something priced at a premium cost, such as this is, they think, well, why? You know, it's just a box of trading cards. Of course, it isn't just a box of trading cards. Yeah.
I mean, it's a valid question, you know. It's like, it is more expensive than your standard card, and if you're only giving it a sort of cursory look and you don't get, you know, what's sort of involved here, then sure, you might balk at the price, but, you know, most people who understand the background of these things and what they're actually getting have been fine with the price, though, and those are really the people that this is aimed at.
Yeah. Tom, you mentioned earlier, and it came up again in the conversation there, that you had to do an awful lot of research into this. I mean, it wasn't just a case of trying to find guys who were doing the right printing technique or the right card. You were actually analyzing materials for this, weren't you?
The hardest one was the wrappers. The last time that anybody was doing true wax wrapping was 1992. Around 90 to 92 is the transition from real wax paper wrappers to the cellophane that was wrapped in the same method, but with cellophane instead of plastic, instead of wax.
Yeah.
And then finally to the end foil crimp type, which is what is prevalent today. And so I took a bunch of the old vintage wrappers, which was a real kick. I started gathering them up. I got them from collectors. I got friends who had wrappers. I got a bunch on auction sites and started studying them. And I sent a few out to a lab to actually get the wax formula analyzed and what was the thickness on them. I have an engineering background, so that I could really dive down that hole and really entertain myself at length with studying the mechanics of these wrappers. But once I finally got the answers, then it became a project of being able to do an accurate wax coating. And the first thing, of course, I tried to do is track down a real machine that was doing this, and they don't exist anymore, particularly the machines that would do the folding. The last one was scrapped in like 1996 in Chicago. So the project was to actually accurately reproduce this wax wrapper, and I ended up designing and building my own machine to do that whole process. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I think I'm the only one doing authentic, real, true blue wax wrappers, and it's a joy. I mean, you can feel the difference the moment you pull them out of the box.
Yeah, they feel off wax, yeah.
Oh, it is wax.
Yeah, exactly.
And the hand knows. You know, there have been a couple of companies who have gone to, I think Topps is also, you mentioned them with their Heritage series, and they're trying to simulate that, but it's not real wax. And your hand, you just close your eyes and touch it with your hand, and you're 10 years old again.
Yeah. I know the top set you're referring to, which is the Star Wars Heritage, I think, they went for a sort of style, but it was really a little more than plasticized paper. And it was still that sealed, crimped at both ends. So you just got a tube of these things, and the cards get slotted in, and it's crimped at both ends, whereas yours are properly folded. They look like they'd fall apart as soon as look at them, but the wax actually keeps them together very well.
I'd like to mention at this point, Kurt from Monster Wax was extremely helpful with this. When I started doing this project and started doing my research, I started reaching out to a couple of the companies out there that are small printers and publishers of trading cards, and Kurt was wonderful. He gave me a lot of time on the phone right off the bat to discuss what I was doing, and he shared a lot of information about his company and how he proceeds, and he was a tremendous start for me.
Yeah, Kurt Kustein has been on the podcast in the past, and he is an amazingly forthcoming guy. I could have spent hours chatting to him when he came on, and in fact, I think I did spend hours chatting to him when he came on. He is an amazingly friendly guy and very helpful.
The other half of this, of course, is the Sucklord with the artwork, because I know he spent a lot of time looking at and studying the older cards, and if you look at the set, there is a broad range of elements that are drawn off of old Marvel cards, off of Black Hole. Mm-hmm. There's many editions that were inspiration for this.
Yeah. And in fact, to such an extent that you've actually included real, genuine vintage cards in the set, though they have, of course, been amended slightly in some cases. And then they came from a variety of different sets. The box I got had a card from Welcome Back Cotter. I know some people have reported getting cards from the A-Team, Batman and Robin. There are some Star Wars cards in there. How difficult was it to source those? And whose idea was it to put those in to give you an idea of what you were actually trying to do with the rest of the set?
Well, I'm going to jump in on that one. The Batman cards came from my personal collection when I was years old. You know, nothing's precious. So I found when working with the Sucklord, it's all grist for the mill. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing precious. So some of my old collection went in there along with other pieces that were specifically acquired for this project. And part of it was a little bit of bragging because we knew how close we had achieved the vintage look and style. And so we thought to toss a couple of the vintage cards in to really, you know, we would
right,
stand.
So it wouldn't blow it. It's like, you know, you can't, the idea that you can't tell the difference.
Mm. And they are amazingly close in feel and look. I know when I pulled my Cotter card out, apart from the fact that the only reason I recognised it was Cotter was because I read the slogan on the back. I don't think we ever got that show over here. But the look and the feel of the thing was almost identical to the base cards and the rest of the cards in the set.
Bragging. I didn't even realise that until you just said that.
Yeah, they really were close. They are amazingly close.
But I mean, the idea of putting them in there just to show, you know, just to remind you, hey, we hit it.
This is what we're trying to do, and you've pretty much hit it, is the idea on that one. Now, one of the other inserts that went into this, and I know there's been a lot of pleasurable discussion about this, was the sketches. Now, sketch cards have become really big news in the mainstream trading card world over the last few years, and you yourself, Sucklord, have mentioned that you were involved with Topps on their Star Wars Galaxy set doing the die-cut cards.
Right.
How much of a leap was it for you to think, well, we've got to have sketch cards in this set?
Well, it wasn't a leap at all, just because, I mean, to be honest with you, I had forgotten about trading cards. It's like I had, in the early 2002, 2003, I got the bug to try to do exactly this, and couldn't figure out how to do it, and then just forgot about it, you know, and just, it was one of those things, I just said, someday, I'm going to revive this, and I just forgot about it. And then, out of the blue, I get that call from Topps asking me to do the sketch cards. And I didn't even really know what sketch cards were at the time. I had given up on modern day trading cards for all the reasons we've already listed. I found them kind of a bit sterile. So it sort of got, that brought me into that world doing the Galaxy 4. And then when I saw the reaction to those things and how crazy people went for those cards in particular, like they didn't even care about the base cards in a lot of cases. They only bought Star Wars Galaxy for the sketch cards. So by the time we got to doing the sub-packs, it seemed like pretty much a foregone conclusion. I think a lot of the sort of random stuff that we wound up inserting were an extension of the sketch cards in a way, you know, just putting a splatter card or a distress card, some type of specialty card. It all kind of came out of the concept of the sketch card. So it was kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. Now, you got quite a roster of artists together for this set. How difficult was that? I mean, obviously, this is the first time you've done a trading card set. People will be familiar with you from your other work, and obviously they'll be familiar with you from the Topps stuff that you curated. How easy was it to talk some of these guys who are established, well-known artists who maybe don't have that much involvement with trading cards to participate in your set?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how established or well-known anybody is in that set. I mean, with the exception of Len Bellinger, who was somebody I met through the Die Cuts, the Topps project, everybody else were just the most, I just reached out to the people that were closest to me, the most readily available, and the people that I thought would be most down to do something like this without me having to pay them. So
right.
It was just sort of like, I just did a sort of a graph, you know, like, how talented is somebody versus how easy will it be for me to just get them to do work for free? And that's who wound up in the set.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was, I mean, it was that was it. And none of them, I don't think any of them are really supremely famous. I mean, some of them are known in their little sub-worlds. Some of them are toy guys, but, you know, they're just basically friends, talented friends that I asked for a favor.
Yeah. Now, that's what I meant by established. They're established in their own fields, which is not necessarily trading cards.
No, not at all.
Yeah. They were all willing to come, obviously, they were all willing to come on board because you've got quite a roster of different artists and different artistic styles incorporated in the set.
Well, I have a certain group of people that will do whatever I tell them to do.
Oh, fair enough.
I go back to them repeatedly.
We all humor him and pretend to do what he asks.
Well, I got what I wanted, so I don't need to know. I don't need to know anything else.
You do what you want and then say, well, that's what you asked for.
Well, I mean, apparently people want to do stuff. I mean, you know, most people that I deal with, like I curated plenty of art shows, you know, in the toy world and everything. And it's like, you know, there's those people that are really successful and are a bit unapproachable, but there's plenty of talented people out there who really just want to do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, they just want to do their art and they want to be recognized for it, and they want to be included in something that's going to go somewhere, do something, you know, and it's not really even for them about the money. They just want to do their thing. I've been doing this for a while, and it's like, there is a certain amount of clout for this psychedelic brand, you know, that attracts people, so it's not that hard.
It works, yeah. Now, obviously, I think I can probably guess the answer, but when it comes to some of the larger companies, as far as sketches are concerned, they're working with licensed franchises, and there are all sorts of restrictions set on what the artist can and cannot do. In some cases, they can only do colour, or they can only do pencil, or they can only draw certain characters. They can't do this, they can't do that, and so on and so forth. Were there any parameters that you laid out for the artist, or did you just say to them, look, draw what you want to draw. If it's relevant to the Suck Lord and psychedelic, then it's in the
set.
Yeah,
I didn't put that many restrictions on it. I mean, I just, you know, I explained to people what it was, and I said, you know, just do psychedelic shit on these cards. And we only gave people like 15 cards each.
Yeah.
So it was just like, go ahead, just do something psychedelic. And, you know, a lot of people just drew pictures of my toys, you know, like Jason Atomic did that. He did the same thing he did at Galaxy 4 for psychedelic.
Yeah.
You know, he just drew pictures of the cards, of the figures. And, you know, that was it. I mean, I only got one set back that had nothing to do with psychedelic, but we put them in anyway, and people liked them.
Oh, fair enough.
One artist chose to, Patrick Francisco, just did his own characters, and they were tenuously connected because they were science fiction, and I'm like, okay, that's cool, we'll take them.
That works, yeah.
There weren't a lot of restrictions.
Yeah.
One of the most wonderful things was when all these sketch cards came back, and we had them on the table all at one time. It was just incredible to see them all at once, before they were boxed up, before they got distributed into the boxes. It was just astonishing to see the range of art and talent and inspiration people brought to these cards, and also to realize that they were about to disperse and that they would never be all together again.
Yeah.
It's tempting not to start picking a few out that you like to keep.
I was going to ask, was that temptation was there, but you didn't bite on that.
No, in fact, at one point, my hands were getting, like, starting to reach for them, and I looked at the suckler, and I said, and he knew what was in my mind, and he said, no, they all go in, they all go in.
Yeah.
I just thought, like, if you take one out because you like it, then you open the gate to, like, keeping all the good stuff for yourself, and that's, you know, not the point. I mean, we got great scans of all of them, and all these artists can do more work for us if we want it, so I figured, you got to let them go. That's the whole point of this thing.
Now, again, something different from what a lot of the more mainstream companies do, there weren't much in the way of artist returns in these, were there? Pretty much all the cards that were drawn by the artists went into the packs.
Yeah, in fact...
Yeah, we didn't do any returns, except for Len, of course. He took some.
Yeah.
In fact, because we had ended up with more sketch cards than boxes, there are boxes, several of the boxes have two... And I think there's even a couple with three sketch cards in them.
Yeah, I know there had been some reports. I mean, the box I got to review had two. It had a Jason Atomic and one of the Len Bellinger triptychs, which is a wonderful idea, I have to say. I know a few people have reported getting more than one in boxes, which is a great place. I pulled out the Jason Atomic, fell in love with that because it's just such a vibrant card, and wasn't expecting to get anything else in there as far as art was concerned. So I opened a couple of packs from the end of the box, and there was a very thick card in there. I thought, ooh, okay. And it proved to be a Len Bellinger. I mean, Len's cards have been getting some rave reviews every time anybody's posted images, but it's not just his cards that have been getting the reviews. All the artists have been getting really good comments about their artwork, haven't they?
Yeah, I guess. Good for them.
Yeah, well, so that's what I mean. You know, I have yet to see anybody say anything really negative, apart from the pricing, which we already discussed. Anything negative about this set. Were you surprised at the reaction that it got?
I knew this shit was hot when we started.
Mm-hmm.
Not to sound like that guy, but I knew we had a winner here. I was very confident going in that this was going to be a success.
Yeah.
But I don't know what Tom thought. He might have been a little more, you know, nervous. I don't know.
No, I wasn't nervous because I had the same feeling. What I found amazing was how many people got what we were doing just from the box. When the first boxes went out there, there wasn't much chatter on, or any chatter on Scoundrel or any other bulletin board about them. So the first boxes that went out were total shots in the dark. And yet from the feedback we were getting, we realized that people got what we were doing as far as kind of revitalizing that collector urge or feeding that 10-year-old experience of having to go and get more packs in order to get the cards and to have to swap. And also the vintage, it still happens to me. When we started to do this project and I pulled out my old collection that I hadn't seen in a hell of a long time, as soon as I started handling the cards, it brought me back to that time. And the other element that was really enriching about this is that from a business view, I'm the kind of the business production side of this, and they're selling far faster than I even dreamed they would sell. I mean, we sold well into the second half of the 100 run, and I thought it would take probably about two or three times as long as it has to sell what we've got already.
Yeah.
I'm just astonished that people are getting it so fast.
And it's not just collectors that have been buying boxes for their own personal collection. I know that there have been some posts online. These things are selling into stores, and some of the stores are just putting them up as boxes, and people can buy one pack or half a dozen packs or whatever, aren't they?
Yeah, we're hoping to that, yeah.
Yeah, that's in some stores. I don't know exactly where they are. We have a distributor that gets them out, and I actually, to be honest with you, I never really asked him where he sold them.
Yeah. I know there's a couple of stores in the UK that have them. I've seen some of those about. Well, obviously, we're not talking about the big mainstream card dealers, but they are in stores and people are buying them. Well, it's counterculture, underground stuff, record stores of all places.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen a few posts for those, and they've been popping up in those, which is cool.
They should probably be in a CD pornographic store.
Well, exactly.
So the set's sold amazingly well. Presumably that means there's a future for more sets from both the Psych Lord and from Sidekick. Is that right?
Definitely. I mean, obviously they did well, and there's the demand for more. So the idea is really to expand the business beyond just doing Psych packs 2, 3, 4, which is going to happen, but even my creative universe has its limits, and this format is essentially limitless, so it makes a lot of sense to open it up to other creative types, people that we're sort of being very deliberate about who we're choosing to share the production with. People have been coming at me a lot since this came out asking, how did you do the wax paper, how did you do this, and can you make my set, can you make my wrappers, and generally the answer is no. It's like, not to put down anyone else's work, but this isn't just a for-hire company,
No.
It's like, it's got to sort of relate to our vision, and it's like, we want to be a little bit elitist about this thing and just sort of maintain a certain inaccessibility to it. We don't want to overdo it with just anything.
No.
But that said, there are a handful of people that we're talking to about producing sets for them, which are going to have their own unique features, and that I'm not really even going to be involved with from the design point of view. It's the object. The idea is to get another person to put his vision on a set of cards, and Sidekick will produce those things. Whatever. We'll just use that as a platform to grow the business.
Sure.
And, I'll run my Sub-Packs 2 through there when I'm good and ready, and by the time Sub-Packs 2 comes around, Sidekick Media will be a much more efficient entity as far as getting things done faster and easier, and for maybe a little less as well.
Obviously, there's a Sub-Packs 2 planned in the cards. Is there anything you can talk about on future projects, what you've got planned coming up?
Well, to echo what the Suck Lord said, part of my inspiration for my side of this is a company in Pittsburgh from the early 90s called FPG.
Mm.
They had gorgeous sets that were artists like Ken Kelly. They just made dazzlingly beautiful pure art sets. And so our plan here is to work with artists, not so much to license a TV series or something along those lines. So the next thing out of the gate is actually a group artist set called Art Hustle. And we've been gathering materials. A fellow named Simeon Lipman is shepherding this set. And we're shooting for June of the summer for it to come out. And it's going to be a massive set. Again, it's going to be a limited number of boxes and heavily loaded with specialties in the boxes. At this point, we're looking at maybe printing upwards of 200 separate cards to go into this set.
Wow.
It's going to be massive.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's going to be a lot more expansive, too, than the Sub-Packs, because it's going to be, the subject matter is artists themselves. So the artists, each artist is going to have, two cards based on them and their work, and then each of those artists are going to have specialty cards, or some of them are going to have specialty cards, and each one is going to do their own sketch cards. So I don't know how many artists there are, like 50 at least, I think. So
right,
there's going to be, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So each one of those artists is going to have their own sketch cards. It's just in general, going to be a lot more diverse.
It's sort of like a rookie card and old hands set here. It's going to be a lot of the usual suspects. Len is going to be involved in this one, Jason Atomic, and we've also gotten material from others, like Frank Kozik, Ron English. It's going to be quite a broad range here.
Yeah, so it's covering a pretty wide spectrum of the art and artists as a field.
Well, yeah, and I think the idea of a set like that is, like Tom said, it's like people's rookie cards, you know, and it's like a team set, but then from all the people that are contributing to this set, I imagine a good number of them are going to go on to have their own solo set.
Yeah.
And then after that will be the Suppacks too. I know the Sucklord is working right now on generating work ideas. And again, our plans are afoot to make that a fun set also. You know,
with the Suppacks too, I think at this point there's no real reason to like completely reinvent the wheel. It's like we've sort of hit on something that works for me, and I think it's going to be more of just like an expansion on the same concept. It's going to look and feel the same, but it's going to have probably push the envelope with the special inserts and the sketch cards and the trying to throw in as many new type of mysteries as possible. But I hope to have a personal set out one a year at least.
Yeah.
Also, I think this is going to chronologically be some more recent work. The Suppacks 1 was a lot of your early work up to a certain stage.
Well, yeah, the idea, you know, the underlying idea was that the subject matter itself was going to be sort of a portfolio set where I just sort of laid out the work that I've been doing under the Suckadelic name since I started, and this one starts at the beginning. I think it starts in 1997, and then it's going to pick up, it ends in 2005, I think, so the next two sets are just going to, I'm just going to wait, I guess I'll stop when the sets catch up to what I'm doing at the moment. Like, I know, like, Suppacks 3 is probably going to have a Suppacks 3 card in it, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be kind of funny like that.
It's going to get very, very into itself on that one.
Yeah, it gets super self-referential. Like the second series is just going to be photos of the last series.
Hey, it works for me. I'm sure there's going to be people out there that are going to really dig that. They're going to get that and say, yeah, okay, that works.
We're going to get real meta about it.
Exactly, yeah. You'll have artists doing sketch cards of the base cards. And
we're actually going to put artists in the boxes doing sketch cards.
Right.
Could make for some really big boxes, I suppose. Okay. Well, as I say, obviously those are the plans for the future. The present, the Suckadelic Series 1 is still available, but extremely, it started off being limited. It's getting increasingly limited the more boxes are bought. So if people want to pick up boxes or packs, where would be the best place to go?
You could just buy them off Suckadelic.com and get a full box or 5-pack.
Yeah, and you ship internationally for those, because I know there's been a lot of interest in this.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We've had boxes go to France, to Spain, to England. We've also, as well as all of the U.S., so it's been quite an international audience for this.
Mm. So, if anybody...
Well, America and Europe. I think they're available in Japan, too, through the distributor. I think they are available in a few stores in Japan.
Yeah.
That was a real wild moment for me, because I was just Googling around and suddenly I'm finding all these Japanese, I found four or five Japanese sites that were selling Suppacks. All Japanese, and I posted links to them on the Scoundrel Board.
Oh, okay.
Just blew my mind that these Japanese sites are selling the Suppacks.
That's amazing.
Why does that blow your mind? That makes total sense to me. I mean, the Japanese are just as much into nerdy shit like this as anyone else.
If not more so, by some of the stuff that they have coming out. So it's a global project. It's a global phenomenon, and I'm very glad to have seen a part of it. So.
Yeah, thanks for the props.
Hey, you know, it's I only give them when they deserved, and this set deserves it massively.
Well, that's cool, man. I'm glad. I mean, you know, it's like if I could blow a little smoke up your ass, you know, it's guys like you who react this way lets us know that we did something right. You know, I mean, because you're an expert and you have a good taste and all that stuff, and you know this field very well because you know you're in it every day.
Yeah. Well, it's thank you for that. But yeah, it's a great set. And to be honest with you, the more sets like this that we have that give the trading card world a bit of a shake up and show what can be done, the better. Because you guys mentioned, the trading card hobby did get stuck in a rut there for a while of the same thing coming out in every box and every box and every box. And I think collectors have got settled into feeling comfortable with, yeah, I know I'm going to get a base, I know I'm going to get an autograph, I know I'm going to get a sketch. Anything that shakes that up especially in a limited edition like this, is a good thing. And hopefully
I'd be very interested to see if any of the things we've done actually have any sort of effect on other companies.
Not immediately, but yeah, not immediately. But I suspect some of the ideas that he came up with in there, say, will filter out eventually, and you'll be seeing.
Well, that's good. I mean, it'd be a good idea if people started copying us, because it'll keep us on our toes too. I wouldn't want to ever hit cruise control on this and just like phone in some bullshit set that was just like the last thing we did. It's like, hopefully there'll be enough incentives, you know, to constantly keep this innovative. It's like I'm already racking my brain to trying to come up with gimmicks for Subhack 2, you know, that I haven't tried, making sure that I kick a few down the road for Subhack 3.
Sure.
Definitely want to make sure people are constantly being surprised, and that me and Tom are both constantly pushing the envelope.
Chainsaws, that's what we're working on, chainsaws.
Yeah.
That could be, though.
I think we're probably going to do some interesting thing, costume cards, push the envelope with the reimagined vintage cards, things like that.
That could be good. I mean, because obviously you did have what might be loosely described as memorabilia cards in the first set with the travel tickets and all that sort of stuff, but
right. Well, I mean, I will probably always be emptying my pockets and throwing the contents in the wrapper. I mean, probably not the money part, but you know, I just thought that the train ticket was particularly funny because that was the ticket that I used to get to Vermont to work on the card. So those things are either going to go in the garbage or they can go somewhere where they have some sort of, you know, recorded for posterity. You know,
yeah.
Always going to do that.
Exactly. So, well, that's cool.
Use condoms and stuff like that.
Yeah, there may be some health and safety issues on that.
There might be some limits. Maybe there are some limits.
Maybe if you can see
them. You got to have a little trepidation when you open the box.
Yeah, wear gloves. No, but I got them clean. I got tested. It's fine.
That's okay. Okay. The Suck Lord, Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. Thank you for agreeing to come on to the podcast.
Great.
It's really been great talking to you. And as I say, if anybody listening to this is interested in having a better look at the set, there's a review on cardcast.co.uk, which has got pictures of some of the cards that I pulled from the box I got. And you can buy the box and the packs from psychedelic.com. Tom, the Suck Lord, thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks once again to the Suck Lord and to Tom Lichtman for coming onto the podcast and talking in such a full and frank way about their set and their future projects, and indeed about the world of trading cards in general. I had a really great time talking to the pair of them, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As a matter of disclosure, I should point out that the box that I was sent for review was sent by Sidekick Media. If you are a manufacturer and you would like to have a set reviewed on a future episode of the podcast, then please do get in touch. Email address is ukcarcast@googlemail.com. Episode 25, subject matter undecided at present, but almost certainly will include Harris Tozer, and if I can sort out some convenient recording times, Chris Kersey as well. So it'll be back to the regulars next episode. Hoping to get that one recorded and out sometime towards the end of March, beginning of April. So watch this space for further information. I will be increasing my tweets concerning the podcast on Twitter. So if you're on Twitter and you don't already follow me, you'll find the details of the Twitter account on the Cardcast website. It's @UKCardcast. Do a search for @UKCardcast on Twitter. You'll find us. Most of the time I'm tweeting about general things. Twitter is one of those things. But every so often I will post updates about what's going on with the latest episode, whether I'm about to record, whether I'm in the middle of an editing session, whether I'm attending a show, whatever. So please do feel free to follow me on Twitter. The Facebook group and the Facebook fan page are both still there. Do a search for UK Carcast on Facebook and you'll find both. If you're not already a fan or member of the group, then please do join up and sign up. Plus, of course, there's always our website, that's carcast.co.uk, that has links to all of the past episodes, as well as links to some of the other sites where you can find the podcast. There's also a link to the Trading Card Museum, who very kindly host streaming versions of some of the episodes, some of the more recent episodes. And there are links to any and all of the companies and artists that have featured on episodes of the podcast in the past. UK Carcast is recorded using Pamela for Skype on a Windows XP PC using a Logitech USB headset. It is edited using Audacity and is compiled using GarageBand on an Apple Mac G4. Music is provided by Sapphire Moon. MP3 hosting is provided courtesy of the Internet Archive at archive.org. Website hosting is by Google Pages. Other website services provided by 1&1 and Amen World. Email provided by Gmail. UK Carcast is issued under a Creative Commons license. For more information about the Creative Commons license, please visit the website at carcast.co.uk. That's it for episode 24. Once again, thank you for persevering with me through my brief break. Normal service is now officially being resumed. So until next time, remember, one pack is not enough, even when it sucks.